You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with the Writer, where readers and writers meet,
and story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell.
We're so delighted that you're joining us, whether you are listening for a first time, maybe you're catching this live on Facebook or YouTube, or you're catching it on the podcast. We're delighted that you decided to share the road with us tonight. That was the Hot Texas Swing Band starting us off, as they always do, with a little bit of their song, Hot Texas. Hey, Jim, who do we have with us tonight?
Helen Wan.
We have Helen Wan. She's
going to talk about her book, Echoes of Forgotten Places.
Oh, my gosh. Talk about story is everything. I think that everything possible is in this book.
Almost.
Although there will be another, we understand. So, welcome, Helen.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're happy to have you. Jim has a little, a little short bio.
Helen Wan grew up in the rugged hills of the Columbia River Gorge, where her stories originate. She knew and loved many of her characters, making their stories even richer and more compelling. And she just received the 2023 Will Rogers Bronze Medallion Award for Western Modern Fiction for Echoes, of Forgotten Places, our book tonight. Helen currently lives in Gresham, Oregon, and is working on her third novel. Welcome, Helen.
Thank you so much.
So delighted to have you. Let's talk just a moment, because Jim just mentioned that this book is a prize winner. Tell us about the Will Rogers Medallion Award and what it was like when you heard or you knew your name was announced.
I was stunned, actually. I had forgotten that I had entered the contest. And a friend of mine called me and said, "Have you checked the finalists?" And I said, "No," pretending like I had just forgotten to do it. And there I was in category 22, modern Western fiction.
So did that just make your heart race, or what? So what what were your first thoughts?
I see, when I started to write, I didn't really think anybody would read it. I mean, you know, I had never written before. And so I had one book out, but I mean, when I was writing, I really didn't think, and the first book made had some really good reviews, and so I thought, well, you know, it's possible. I actually entered the contest on a whim, because I wanted to enter a local contest, and I missed the day by, I missed by one day to enter it, because I was volunteering at a historical society. And so I just started looking for contests, and I entered it and had no idea that I would win it. And of course, I went down to Fort Worth in October and took my entourage with me. So, as you can tell, if you read the book, there's a lot of people in my family.
It's true.
And several of them joined me, and that was absolutely wonderful. And I kind of walked through it like I was sort of unbelieving, you know.
Well, it is a terrific book.
Well, we had a first book, right?
We had a first book, and the name
Eagle's
of it,
Nest.
Where Eagles Nest, yes. Yes. I have a copy back here if you want me to show it.
If it's easy to
that's fine.
To get a hold of it. This is live radio, folks. What you see and hear is happening as it happens. Oh, and there it is. It's a beautiful cover. Yes.
It's a new edition, but it's old, a new cover, but the same book.
Yeah.
The same book.
Yeah. Wonderful.
You know, Helen, you mentioned you didn't do a lot of writing, but you did write a book, as we just talked, Eagle's Nest Before Echoes of Forgotten Places. When did you actually start writing in your career, or as a youngster, maybe?
No, actually, I started probably 30 years ago.
Okay.
I was actually at the tail end of my career when I started it. And I was just compelled to write it. The stories were floating around in my head and they kept telling me to write them down. So I did.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
What inspired this specific book? And I know there's a really wonderful story behind the title, Echoes of Forgotten Places. Why don't you touch on that for a moment?
Yes, thank you. I grew up in rural East Multnomah County in northern Oregon on the Columbia River Gorge. The Columbia River is the boundary of Oregon, so you know how northern it is. And in that 134 square miles, there were 11 one-room schools. And as I continued my research on this book, I realized that there wasn't a single person that I knew of in the historical society or that I knew of otherwise in the community of Pleasant View, which is our westernmost one-room schoolhouse in that area. I realized that not one single person knew the location of all the schools. They knew about where they were. They did not know where the location was. So as I wrote the book, I became very determined to have somebody, and my brother and I tried to get the GPS coordinates for where each school had stood. And there's very few of them that are still standing, maybe two or three of the whole thing. And their residences now.
And their residences now. That's fascinating.
You know, you indicate in the book that that's, you know, several times, that it's really gorgeous, gorgeous country up there. Is that right?
It really is. It is beautiful country. The winters have been bad because the Columbia River Gorge, if you have ever seen it or seen pictures of it, it's like a huge canyon. And the wind from, and of course, we're right near the ocean. We're like an hour from the ocean.
Yeah.
And so the winds up and down the gorge pretty much whistle through it like a funnel. And so the winters can get pretty rugged. And so that's what Juliana had to deal with. And even worse in those days, because the winters have been milder lately. So that was one of the things. And I did bring that on the book. I couldn't help it because my childhood was memories of winters were bad winters with no electricity. And of course, we were all prepared for it in those days. But it stood out in my mind, basically.
So it
is beautiful, beautiful country. I mean, farming it is a little tough because there's a lot of hills.
Yeah. Where we know now a little bit about where this story takes place. Can you kind of give us the parameters of time when it more or less opens and where it concludes, although it points to another book, but where it concludes?
Yes, thank you. This echo starts in 1897, actually. And it starts with Juliana and her eight children and a widow on the home place, on the homestead. And it goes until 1916. So in that time space, a lot of changes were made in our culture.
Yes.
So that was really so much fun to write about because I could write about their surprise, how they handled the changes, what they thought of them. And I just really had fun doing that and researching as well.
Yeah. And it's partly why it falls in the category of modern Western. We so often, if we hear the term, you know, Western fiction, we may think, you know, okay, it's going to be 1830 to 18, you know, 90. and to say modern, kind of like, so what would that mean? So having it start right before the turn of the century and then take us in. And in a few moments, we'll talk about some of those cultural changes. One of the things that struck both of us so much, I think, is, of course, it is historical fiction, but it is very much based on, as you have mentioned and touched on, family history and family stories and relatives in your family. One of the things that to me was so compelling is one of our main character, Juliana, she writes letters home to Germany. And you give us those as the author. Every time Juliana writes a letter, we get to read what's on her heart and on her mind. And I think when we chatted before, I asked you, did you actually have those letters, or did you go into Juliana's mind and into stories, you know, and you created those letters? Tell us about those letters.
Well, the letters have a huge story behind them. We actually have in our possession now all of them. When I wrote them, I only knew about the letter. I knew that Juliana continued to write home. Tracy, my grandmother, Teresa, told me that her mother wrote home often, but I did not have any of the letters. But I did have the one that Tracy wrote, so I put that one in. I believe I put that one in. It's been a long time since I read my book, you know, 2 or 3 months. There was one from Frank that we had that I put in that was word for word. Having said that, quickly, I will mention that writing Where Eagles Nest built a fire under one of the cousins, Julius or Jackie's grandson. He started doing genealogy. He got us a trip to Liechtenstein. And when we got there, he had notified people that were related to us through Alex, mostly, because Juliana was from Malschwaden, Germany. How they met, I don't know, but they did meet. So, you know, but anyway, there was one cousin that came and he had a box in his arms and he was holding it to his chest. Now, mind you, these people didn't speak very good English. They did speak a little English. None of us spoke German, but we communicated. And when he decided he could trust us, he showed us that box, and it contained letters dated from 1893 to 1907 or 8. Most of them were from Juliana. There was two from Alex. And my sister, who was a archivist and a librarian, and my cousin had thought to get a very good scanner for some reason. He brought that along. Thank God. And
smart.
They spent 2.5 hours scanning those letters, so we have them. And then we paid to get them translated because it was all in Alemannic German.
Yeah, that's just fascinating to me. And Juliana, you want to ask about Juliana? And
well, I have another question.
I know you have another question. Go for it, Jim.
A little more background here.
Okay.
You know, to me, as we talked the other night, you know, it's still an Oregon Trail story, even though this is long past the famous Oregon Trail. But, you know, the folks migrated from Germany to, I think they ended up in Illinois or someplace, and then later they headed to Oregon. Could you tell that story a little bit?
Yes, but every immigrant usually tries to make it to people they know or somebody in their culture. Mm-hmm. It was no different from Alex. He had some relatives already in Illinois, in the Freeport area. And when I asked my grandmother years ago, when did her mom and dad come to Oregon or come to the United States? And she said they came to the United States as sweethearts and married in Freeport. So I did my due diligence and I got the ship manifest. And yes, indeed, they did come as sweethearts. And I wrote to the Freeport County and yes, indeed, I got a copy of their marriage certificate. But the land was already taken in Illinois, and they heard that there was land in Oregon. And most immigrants come to the United States for a better life. And that's what they wanted. And Alex wanted land. He was basically a farmer. Mm-hmm. And so when he got to Oregon, and there were some people from Freeport that he knew about because they lived in Freeport for at least a year. My grandmother, Tracy, was born in Freeport. Mm-hmm. And she came to, I asked her, and she said, we came to Oregon the spring after the railroad came through from St. Paul. And it was, that would have been April of 1894, March, April, February, mm-hmm. sometime in that era. Mm-hmm. And she said she was two, but she wasn't. That was a little off, but of course her memory at two wouldn't have anyway.
But right, Fred, so they, you know, train. Yeah, so the train was really important.
Oh, the train was amazing. I had an opportunity to go to the Oregon Historical Society when they had their exhibit about the early train. And I went through and mapped it all out and made a lot of notes. And they had not built a bridge across the Snake River. The train came from St. Paul, and one spur went to Tacoma, and the other spur went to Portland. And in order for that track to go to Portland, they had to cross the Snake River, and there hadn't been a bridge built. And so they ferried the train across, which just blew me away.
Ferried the train across. Oh my goodness. Well, yeah. This couple, Alex and Juliana, are really, really an amazing couple, but certainly much like so many of the pioneer families and newlyweds and such that came west. And of course, Juliana finds herself in a situation that many women did. She has 8 kids and her husband, and this is not a spoiler alert because we get this right as the book is opening. We're learning about some of the past history that gets us there. But Alex has passed away along with a child of consumption. Remind me.
Yeah. Consumption.
Yes. Consumption.
Consumption. Yes.
But yeah. Tuberculosis. Right. And there's Juliana with all these kids, young. They're all young. Mm-hmm. And a farm. And a farm.
And no money.
Neighbors. We do learn about truly how neighbors. How does Juliana get herself, how does she maneuver through that time? Helen.
Well, they came from Illinois with another couple. I am not sure if they came on the same train, but they ended up here together, and the Frummels, and Catherine Frummel and Franz Frummel went to school with Alex in Liechtenstein, that I'm sure of. And so they had the neighbors. So fortunately, Catherine and Juliana were fast friends, and Franz promised Ellick that he would help her, which of course he would have anyway, I'm sure, because people had to depend on each other then. Juliana started selling off pieces of her property. I believe she had 160 acres. I think that it wasn't a full homestead. But at 20 acre parcels. But of course, when Alex passed away, she did not know if she had the papers. They had lost them. And so he passed away in September, and she didn't get the papers until November. So then she realized, and so then she could sell 20 acres. Mm-hmm. Cash, everybody was cash strapped in those days. They farmed, they logged, they fished. Those are the three big things here in the Northwest, Northern Oregon and Southern Washington in those days. Most of them did some or partial or partly of them, firewood for the steamboats that plied the river was essential. It took 4 cords an hour to go upstream on a steamboat. So there was a lot of, whenever people logged off for a piece of ground to farm, they sold it down at the wharf for the steamboats. In fact, it pretty much denuded a lot of the country, actually.
Yes. We're going to take a very short break, and we're going to see where and show our listeners and watchers where they can get your book. And then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the characters and some of the challenges that they face. So don't go away, Helen. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this ad from bookshop.org. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shops Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer with a special guest, Helen Wan. We're talking about her book, Echoes of Forgotten Places.
That's a great read.
You know, this is definitely a farming story. I think we talked before. Did you grow up on a farm, Helen?
I did. If I heard the tractor running when I woke up in the morning, I was very aggravated because I wanted to be out there on it with my father.
You know, we talked before. I think I told you the first time I drove a tractor, I was 13, but then you told me you were 9.
I was. I still can't believe it, but I was 9.
Yeah, she wins the contest.
I think she wins. Why weren't you doing it at 9? Is what I really want to know.
You know, I was falling off the horse.
You were falling off the horse. we are talking about some of those challenges in the farming community, and there's a gentleman that shows up one day. Tell us about Frank.
Well, Frank was determined to have a farm. Again, he was from the Freeport, Elizabeth, Illinois area, northwestern Illinois. So he comes west on the train and finds out about the widow woman in Corbett because they were a large Catholic family. He was Catholic. And whenever they had a chance to go to church in the early days, they did not have a local church. They had to go into Portland on the train. So they had friends in Portland, the Fullers, who would house them and welcome them, and they would go to church. And so everybody in Portland knew that Widow Lampert needed help. So he makes his way out. He walks actually out there because he didn't have train fare. It's amazing. They walked so many places. So many places. And I asked Dad one time, I said, Dad, why did they walk? Why don't they ride a horse? And they said, if they're working, number one, they didn't have a horse at that time. But if they're working a horse in the day, in the week, they cannot ride them around. They're working. They need to rest. So anyway, that made sense. So anyway, he gets to the widow Juliana, and she said, well, you know, yes, I do need help, but I have no money. And so they strike a bargain, and he becomes like the big brother to the boys, because Spurt is only 9 when his mother is widowed, and he's the oldest boy. And so by that time, he's maybe 10 or 11, but you're asking an awfully lot of a child of that age to help his mom out in the garden. And of course, all the children helped out in the garden except Tracy, who was asked by her mother, who was 13 when she lost her father, to go to Troutdale to work. And so, and I know that's true. Grandma Teresa told me that she worked for the Foxes and the Harlows in Troutdale.
So there's 3 daughters, and they eventually, each one, I think, is placed outside the home when they're old enough, and they send the money back. Mm-hmm. And each one, and so fortunately, it's a really good position. They're doing work that they end up enjoying. They don't want to leave the farm, but they understand. And then the boys, you know, are starting to get older. And so there's a little money coming in, and Frank is there, and the boys are getting older, and life gets, it's never easy. But Juliana begins to be able to see a little, maybe, light at the end of the tunnel, but she just misses Alex, doesn't she?
Yeah, that's the tragedy of the whole thing, is that their life was really cut short. Their wedding marriage was really cut short.
Yeah. There are some obstacles, and you touched on them briefly. One is really rough weather that can come on very quickly and become numbing and almost, you know, killing a possibility. There are several scenes, and there is the one that I'll never forget with the two boys are believing that they are old enough to do the final kind of vegetable produce run, and they're going to go up to a logging camp and come on back. And they're, you know, they're stout, hardy kids. They really feel that they can do this. And Juliana is a little, I'm not sure. And Frank is, you know, let's let them. And what happens? What happens in that scene?
Well, they try to make it home, and they, you know, the temperature drops, and it's quite a trek up to Larch Mountain in Palmer, which was the logging camp up there. One of the schools was Palmer, which is way out now. We went there, and it's long for me. I can't imagine driving a horse and wagon up there and coming back in the same day, but they did that. And they had a stop off, and the people where they stopped off, and they usually delivered some extra produce to them, and they were kind to them, and they tried to get them to stay because it had gotten so cold and the wind was blowing so hard, but they wanted to get home, so they got them all fixed up to go home. And then that started snowing, and I have been in one of those, one I can remember, really serious blizzards when the east wind's blowing and the temperature is very, very cold, a minus 20 or something, and that doesn't sound very much to Midwestern, but trust me, it's not good.
We believe you.
And so they end up breaking an axle on the wagon, and then one of the boys gets hurt, and they try to ride the horses home, and they don't show up at home, and Aunt Juliana is very frantic, and Frank is sort of overwhelmed with grief because he was the one that said, "Well, yeah, let them go. You know, they'll be fine." So he goes over and gets Franz, and they take off, riding horses. By that time, they have horses.
It's a riveting story, and I bring it up because to the readers, all of our readers out there that are listening about this book, Helen writes this book, you feel like you are right there. I was nail biting the whole time because, you know, every story, you don't know what's going to happen. Will there be loss of life? Will there be an illness that comes from it? Will there be some type of an accident that causes a permanent, you know, challenge for the person? So this may sound like, oh, that just sounds like kind of a, you know, an easy read. And it is, because it's so well written. But you take us from one kind of challenge to the next, especially as this family grows and the kids get older and the, you know, the girls have different things that happen to them in their jobs when they're away from home. And but we also see a lot of joy. We see celebrations and families getting together, like you were saying, you know, for church. And so this is a wonderful escape into another time and another place, and fascinating, engaging characters and all kinds of situations.
Well, you know, this is a life that's not exactly in the forefront of today's modern society. There's fewer and fewer and fewer family farms, and most of them are commercial now. The family farms all became a collective of big companies. And we bring out some serious things. This is not like maybe some of us remember going to Thanksgiving or Christmas at grandma's house, you know. It's this is where people lived in the early days and days gone by. And while you can have a lot of good things occurred on the farm, there was a lot of danger. And whether it be the weather, whether it be accidents or working with the machinery, it posed a challenge. And of course, when something happens, you can't reverse those things.
No.
You know, and it's, it'd be tragic.
Yeah. And their faith plays a really big role in their perseverance, I think, and their moving, you know, moving forward, faith and the camaraderie of the neighbors and the people that they meet over time. That does help them. There's a really another fun incident. 1905, July 6th, 1905. Several of the family members take off for the Lewis and Clark Exposition. What are some of the things that they encounter there, Helen?
Well, for other than Emma and I think at least Emma, who at that time finally was working in Portland, the rest of them really didn't have a lot of experience in city life. And of course, the 1905 Portland Lewis and Clark exhibition was to showcase the innovative things that were happening. And of course, electricity was just starting, electricity by line was just starting. And they had lit this all up with electric lights. And of course, we had a generator, electric plant at Willamette Falls in Oregon City, which is only just a short ways from Portland. And so there was a line, and that was very new to have electricity on a line. And of course, these people, in fact, mother and dad, when they were married in 33, they did not have electricity on the farm yet. I mean, that was how new electricity was. They had electricity by the time I was born, but they didn't have it before that. And so that was an amazing incident. And of course, the suffragette movement was
Right. We'll talk about that in a minute. You want to ask about hot dogs?
Oh. I was trying to remember. You know, hot dogs going through my mind here, and it's getting a little fuzzy. Didn't we talk about the Coney Island hot dog? Yeah. Did we talk about that?
Yeah.
I think that's where we talked about that. And we talked about this newfangled thing called plywood.
Plywood.
Well, I remember the hot dog. Yeah. It was called the Coney Island hot dog, and it was invented by a Greek.
Yeah.
You know, and nowhere near Coney Island.
No, like in the corner of a restaurant or
back room of a restaurant.
Yeah, with Heyer's root beer. So fun. And trolley cars. I think that was another thing that was sort of new to them.
Yeah.
Yes, the suffragists movement. We're talking about some of the technologies and cultural changes that are covered in this book as these main characters encounter them. That was so interesting to me about suffrage. I didn't really know a lot about. And so I, like most readers, we like to be entertained and we like to be informed. And historical fiction can do that so very well. So tell us a little bit about the suffrage movement and specifically Abigail Scott Duniway, which was a name I was not familiar with.
Yes, Abigail Scott Duniway was very spearheaded the suffragette movement in Oregon. Her story is a remarkable story. If you can find a biography of her, she came to Oregon with her parents and on the trail, her mother, who did not want to come, they had several children, as I recall, and they had some small children as well. And her mother, and they lived in Southern Illinois, and her father just came in and said, "We're going to Oregon, sell everything, we're leaving." Yes. And they didn't have a train. Of course, they came by wagon, and most of the kids walked most of the way. And they lost their mom and their little brother. Oh God! That's a few minutes. I'm too sorry.
No worries. It's okay. We're live.
It's live radio. Right?
It's live radio.
And so anyway, she, her husband, talk about accidents. Her husband, after some bad luck on farms, got a job as a teamster with 6 horses and a wagon, you know, and they had a runaway, and he fell off the wagon, and he's injured and was unable to work. So he was handicapped, and they had children. So she and her oldest daughter opened a millinery in Albany, Oregon, which is a small town, a little bit south of here. And she learned in the millinery the difficulties that women were having, just very, very hard lives with very little to say about what happened in their lives. And she began to start thinking about the suffragette movement and how much our lives would improve if we just could have the vote, if we could just have the vote. And so she dedicated the rest of her life pretty much to that. And her brother was the editor of the Journal, I think Journal or Oregonian, one of the two papers in Portland, and he was anti-suffragette. So here he had the paper and had the voice, and she just was, you know, dogged with it. And it was up for a vote, I think, for 5 elections in a row before we finally got it in 1912. And we were like the 5th state to get it. And she was very elderly by 1912. But she was old enough to go down and witness the signing of the suffragette law in Oregon. Mm-hmm.
And all 3 girls in this story, in your relative story, they all get involved in the suffrage. You know, they go to the rallies and they volunteer and they read. She's quite a novelist, Abigail Duniway, and they wait for, you know, the next book that's coming out. And that to me was so very, very interesting. Let's see. I'm just looking at time. We're okay on time. Let's see. You must have a good question, honey.
Well, I'm going to have a thought, you know, what if somebody wants to be on the show?
Oh, somebody wants to be on the show. Well, they could do what Helen did. They reach out. And they say, "Hey, I'm interested in being on your show, what do I need to do? So you can reach out to me at Bobby with an I, Bobby Jean Bell at gmail.com. And you might be an author, a poet, songwriter, could be a blogger, a journalist. Maybe you're a publicist or a literary agent, publisher. Just reach out. Tell me what you have in mind. And we start kind of a dialogue about your work and a time for the show. And the same thing, if you would like to see the show continue and you'd like to help us keep it on the air and be a sponsor in some way, shape, or form, the same thing, just reach out to BobbyJeanBell@gmail.com and say, hey, I want to help. And we'll talk about that. So, Helen, do you write every day?
Well, recently, I guess I should say yes, but writing on my novel has been put on the back burner for the next little while. Now it's getting to the point where I can, but I was advised to write some short stories for some contests, and so I did that. So that has taken up most of my time for the last 6 weeks. It takes a long, it's harder to write a short story than this novel, in my opinion.
I would think so. But that's so interesting. What do you find? Is there one thing that kind of is the challenge to writing a short story, or is just a bunch of different things?
Well, you have to keep it under 5,000 words, and as you can tell, I'm a little bit wordy. So.
Yes, the word count is a biggie, of course.
How long did it take you to write Echoes?
9 years.
9 years, okay.
Yeah.
But I was working most of that time. I still had a full-time job.
Sure.
Right.
I'm hoping this next one, well, it better not take 9 years, because I've got another one after that I want to write. So, yeah, I have to get on the stick now and get busy.
There's a lot of dialogue in the book, as well as just wonderful, fabulous descriptions as people are thinking to themselves or we're going through a landscape. There is quite a bit of dialogue. Do you find writing dialogue easy, challenging? Do you read out loud? Tell us a little bit about writing dialogue.
I love writing dialogue. I absolutely love it. I think you can move the story forward. You can get so much information. You can see the character of the characters, if that makes sense, through dialogue. I really believe that. I mean, I think that I could show Emma as a much more assertive, a much more out there personality by her dialogue, mm-hmm. as opposed to Bertie, who was very devout and quiet. And I could show the boys' difference. I could show Arnold how different he was with than Ferd. I just felt, and it just came naturally because I knew those people. I mean, they were elderly when I knew them, but I grew up with them, so I knew them. It was maybe easier to write about somebody that you know, mm-hmm. but the dialogue, I took a course, this is a good hint for people that want to write. I wholeheartedly believe in seminars and conferences just continue education. You never learn enough, And I took an excellent course from the Lammert Writers Group, a conference one time about writing dialogue, and her big thing was that Hemingway would not have been a good writer if he wouldn't have had all that dialogue, which I thought was very interesting. So I found that dialogue was easy for me to write, and mm-hmm. I think it's more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You go.
You know, it's a little backup question, but. You know, the present family of yours, what do they think of the book?
There she is. What did your present family think of the book?
They enjoyed it. They're excited for me. They're so supportive. My family, I couldn't ask for a better family. They're really wonderful.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Yeah. So what are you working on next?
Well, I'm working on my mother's mother who migrated from Germany to the United States, and she had a very interesting life and a very interesting journey from Germany. Mother told me a lot of stories about her, and so I am writing about Elsa, and the working title is Elsa's Journey, and it may stay that way. Titles are hard.
Yeah.
It took me 2 years to figure out Echo's title. Mm-hmm. I went through many titles before I got to
It's interesting, isn't it?
Do you have another question?
You know, obviously the family is from Germany. Have you been back to Germany a few times or once?
Just that one? Did you go just that one time or have you been back?
No, my sister and I went in 2016, I think. About that time. And we visited, that's when we went to Liechtenstein. We went to Germany, Liechtenstein, and Austria. And I loved it. I thought it was wonderful. I had a wonderful trip, and I hope to go back.
Yeah, yeah. Where can people find you, Helen? Where can they follow you, find you, find your books?
Well, I have a website, helenwanbooks.com. I'd love to have you join my website or come and see me and see what's happening. I also am on Facebook and Instagram, thanks to Blue Cottage Publishing.
Yeah. Yes. Thanks to Blue Cottage Agency. Yes. Don't go away. Jim has a couple quotes.
We do.
Yeah. What you got for us, Jim?
We do. First quote here is, this is from Juliana in the book, and she's thinking, there are times that I am sorry I didn't try to talk Alex out of coming to America. I still do not understand this horrid language, she thought ruefully. It would soon be 20 years since I laid eyes on my family. Mm-hmm. I thought a companion author maybe when we come to farming, Pearl S. Buck in The Good Earth. Out of the land we came and into we must go. And if you will hold your land, you can live. No one can rob you of land. And roots, if they are to bear fruits, must be kept well in the soil of the land. Hunger makes thief of any man. And then true strength is not measured by physical might, but by the ability to endure hardships with grace and resilience.
Wow.
I thought maybe they can kind of talk about farming.
Yes.
I love Pearl S. Buck. I think that's a wonderful quote.
Thank you. Jim always really enjoys.
That's a great book.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I read it.
Me too. It's been a long time.
Well, we want to thank you, Helen, for being with us tonight. We want to thank anybody who's listening or watching either live or on your favorite streaming platform, Spotify, Amazon Music, and such. And of course, on latalkradio.com, you can get both the audio and visual. And we want to point out that our guests next week, we will have Henry Park with the editor of True West Magazine will be joining us, and we will be talking about his book, The Greatest Westerns Ever Made and the People Who Made Them, because our featured guest is a mutual friend of Henry's and ours, Michael F. Blake, and he has just released a book, The Cavalry Trilogy, John Ford, John Wayne, and the Making of Three Classic westerns. Michael is engaging, fascinating, with Henry with us. This is going to be quite a compelling 50-minute interview. So please join us next week. And what else do we have to say?
It's always a great day out west.
Keep
Thank
writing,
you.
Keep reading, and we'll see you next week. Thank you, Helen.
Thank you.